Welcome to an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma give their opinions on the latest happenings surrounding Yankees baseball, as well as dive into the hottest topics in the sports world. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Sheeran and Joe Auriemma.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the last time to the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. Moving forward, this will be the Chris Sheeran show because basically, I could have kept it off the wall, but it's not off the wall without the man to my right.
Ah, thank you.
And that is Joe Auriemma. As you all know, we bid adieu to him last week here on the tag team version of the Off the Wall podcast. Joey is going on to bigger and better things, both personally and professionally. And
yes, sir.
We wished him the best of luck. And that was last week.
Yes.
This week we're going to stick to all sports, and we'll once again bid a fond farewell to Joey at the end. But
at the end, it's a sports show.
Yeah, We've got a lot to do, and we have the Yankees to talk about. We'll get them in a second. Plenty to talk about the Yankees. We'll start with the NBA Finals, though. I think that's a good leaping point. And I talked about this yesterday on the podcast by myself, Joe, and I said to myself, I've seen this movie before. I really have. I didn't think there was any way humanly possible. And listen, I know the game was close throughout. I watched the entire thing. But you could just tell the Spurs were trying to run uphill on a muddy slope, and they just couldn't get up and past.
They never had a lead in the fourth quarter. The Heat, from beginning to end, had the lead in the fourth. And really the one time that they had an opportunity to tie the game, Tim Duncan missed that critical shot. That could have tied the game at 90. And you know what? From that point on, you could just see that that was like the balloon popping for the Spurs, and the Heat just took that momentum of Duncan missing that shot, and that was that. And that the Spurs, I thought they put up a great fight, and to see one of the greatest players of all time miss a shot like that was a little crazy. But on the other side, LeBron James hits a shot down the stretch that was very Michael Jordan-esque. When his team needed him to hit that shot, he hit the shot.
He did. And I looked throughout the season, LeBron with 37 points or more in a game this regular season, which was, by the way, the best in the Heat's franchise history, finishing 66-16 and capping it off with their third NBA title, LeBron's second with the team. He had 37-12 last night and was dominant. This guy is the best basketball player on the planet. Listen, you could hate this guy all you want. You can. But, he handled himself so well after the game. He went over and embraced Tim Duncan, just the way as Duncan embraced him when Duncan Spurs swept up the Cavaliers in LeBron's first title appearance in the finals. And it was a great, poignant moment. He handled it like a gracious winner. And I think that drives, the people that hate him, I think that drives the people that hate him even more crazy. I will still say until I go, and I'll get to those numbers in a second, but I will say until I don't care how many championships he wins with the Miami Heat. Those phony baloney fans down in Miami who left in Game 6, and I kind of stuck up for them a little bit because when I was at Game 7 in 2003 between the Yankees and Red Sox, I was about to leave in the seventh inning because I did not want to see the Boston Red Sox celebrate
on that field
at Yankee Stadium in the house that Ruth built. The whole curse thing, I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to be part of it. Luckily, I stayed, and I was in the section over from where Aaron Boone's home run landed, but back to these numbers for LeBron. He had 37-12 last night. There were five other instances where he had 37 or more points this season. November 12th was the first one, 38 at Houston in a 113-110 win. And the common denominator in all these games, Joe, and I went into the box scores, the big three were the big three.
Right.
Except for the one game, and that was January 17th, the next one where LeBron scored 39 in a 99-90 win over the Clippers. Chris Bosh was a ghost, much like he was in the finals. February 14th, he had 39 at Oklahoma City in a 110-100 win. February 26th, he had 40 against the Kings in a 141-129 win. And the last one before Game 7, 37 at Boston. I remember that one, March 18th, in a 105-103 win over the Celtics. This guy, he's like a shark. He's like Jaws. When there's blood in the water,
right,
he knows when, okay, I need to take this game over or it's going to get out of hand. And I'm not saying Dwayne Wade wasn't there either.
He
was there and he played well last night. And so did Shane Battier. Could he miss a damn shot?
I know. 6-for-8 for 3. I mean, that's a game 7 record in the finals. Unbelievable performance. Chris, I do have to say about LeBron, this championship to me is more impressive than his first championship last year.
And it's what he said, and I'll let you continue after he said this, but it's what he said in the postgame. They pushed us to the limit.
Right.
They hit, you know, it was an irresistible force, meaning the immovable object, and the Heat were able to take the Spurs, basically crumple them up and throw them away. And it's kind of like a new I can't say it's the young getting rid of the old, because the Heat aren't any spring chickens.
No,
by any means.
No, they're not.
And Dwayne Wade knows what he's going
to
be.
And not only that, but that's kind of the point I was getting to, was that...
I'm sorry I interrupted.
No. LeBron James, to me, was the driving force of this championship, whereas last year, you still saw the remnants of a, you know, Dwayne Wade. You know, he was still injured, but, you know, he still had those games, you know, the in-the-prime Dwayne Wade moments. Chris Bosh was averaging 18 points as a big man with, you know, the double-digit boards. Chris Bosh is a shell of what he used to be. Dwayne Wade, you just don't know night in and night out what Dwayne Wade you're going to get with the injuries. And LeBron James was the driving force on this championship team. Last year, I'll give you that. It was a big three championship. This year, I know Dwayne Wade came up very big in big spots, but this was a LeBron James championship. This was Mike, and again, I will never compare Michael Jordan to LeBron James, because I am
it's
a Michael.
Silly.
And they're two different players.
They're two different players.
Two different styles. But you know what? When it came down to it, this was a Michael Jordan-esque championship win for LeBron James.
Because he canned that shot. I mean, that's the shot that everybody says, oh, LeBron doesn't take big shots at the end of the game. You can't say that anymore, because that shot iced it. He scored the last 5 points of that game to ice the series for Miami and get that second world championship for himself. Just an unbelievable season for him, an unbelievable finals, and an unbelievable playoffs. You could, like I said before, you could hate on him all you want. He is the best player on the planet.
And you know what? It's funny that everybody...
All respect to Kobe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And LeBron James is the best player on the planet.
You know, what's funny about this final is that, you know, coming in, everybody was saying, well, you know, the Thunder, it's probably going to be Thunder Heat again. And when Westbrook went down, it was just like, oh, can the Spurs even keep up with the Heat? And you got to give Greg Popovich Hall of Fame coach and his big three a lot of credit. Tony Parker is one of the best in the world right now. Tim Duncan came up big when he needed to come up big. I don't ever want to hear the league saying ever again that, oh, you know what? You know, Pop can't rest his guys, you know, against Miami or in big games during the season.
He knows his team.
He knows that he got the best of his team to Game 7, an older core, playing at the top of their game to the final minutes of Game 7, because he did know how to manage his players.
And David Stern fined him $250,000 for doing it. Oh, what? Because the phony baloney fans in Miami didn't get to see Tim Duncan?
Yeah, and the 10,000 that were in attendance that night.
Give me a break.
No, I agree.
Just awful.
Yeah, and I'm not going to be sad to see his smirk holding up the trophy at the end anymore.
And by the way, I was laughing because I was talking about taking it to the limit in the Scarface song.
Take it to the limit. Limit.
I just see Glenn G. and Grant.
It's the greatest
montage scene.
The greatest success montage in the history of film.
Of film, yes.
Thank you, Brian De Palma, for years and years of joy.
Oh God! Yeah,
just the dollar
bills. The tiger. I'm sorry,
Montana Realty Company.
All of a sudden, it hit me, and I started laughing. I didn't mean to do that in the middle of you talking, but
that's okay.
Yeah. So the Heat wrap up the NBA title and a much deserved title for them. And you know, halfway through the season, the writing was kind of on the wall. Even if there was a healthy Russell Westbrook, I don't think.
No, they wouldn't have. I think the Heat would have taken care of it.
Yeah, I think the Spurs were the right team to go up again, and everybody was on the Grizzlies. You know, the Grizzlies, they'll beat the Spurs in 6, they'll beat the Spurs in 5. I think the Heat would have dispatched the Grizzlies as well. I just think you needed a team in there that had that experience and that had the moxie and it had a little bit of youth to go along with the veterans that the Spurs had.
Green and Neal and all those
guys.
Kawhi
Leonard, he had it. Oh, my God, did he have a game last night. 19-16 for Kawhi Leonard. And his defense is unbelievable. He is a rising star. He's going to be a rising star.
It seems like the Spurs have kind of reloaded a little bit where they're going to be competitive. But you just got the sense that through this NBA playoff run, that they felt that the core that was there, the staples, the Tim Duncan Ginobili pair, because Parker's going to be there for a little bit longer, but the Duncan, the Spurs as we know it, the Spurs that we've become accustomed to since the late 90s, these guys, you kind of felt like, this might be our last ride in the sun. So that they had that it quality throughout the entire playoffs. Like, you just can't explain that quality that they have, but they had it throughout the entire playoffs.
Yeah, and we can't forget, we talked about LeBron James' big shot in Game 7 to give them a four-point lead. How about the three to help them come back in Game 6 down the stretch as well? Talk about, not wanting to take the big shot. He did it in Game 6 to keep the Heat alive, right. And then he won the series in Game 7 with that last shot.
He's unbelievable. He's on a different plateau.
And I'll tell you right now, I want to get your thoughts on this. I said this yesterday. If the Miami Heat lose that Game 7, LeBron James and his legacy go, I don't want to hear any Michael Jordan comparisons.
No, I agree with you.
He goes to 1-3 in the finals. You give him that one with the Cavaliers because he was basically the team there. I mean, he's going up against the big three in San Antonio back in 2007.
Right.
You're talking
right.
about 6 years ago, those guys in their prime.
Yeah.
Or, probably the...
No, that was they were right in the
midst,
height of their run. Yeah.
Right. And, I just think... That's why I said yesterday, there was no way in my mind Miami was losing that game. None. It's not because of the way the Spurs lost Game 6. Everybody wants to come out.
No.
These talk show hosts that want to say, the Spurs were dejected. It's not even going to be
not
a
even
game.
True. No.
You can't listen.
You saw the way they played. They came out and they were
so
wanting to win
so
game.
So you're
going to
tell me Tony Parker, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, Danny Green, Kawhi Leonard, Tiago Splitter. After that Game 6, they all got together, they had a little dinner, and they said,
We're done.
Why are we going to show up Game 7?
Yeah, why are we gonna
it's
show up?
Asinine. Yeah. Enough already. I can't stand hearing that. And the other thing I wanted to get your thoughts on, because you weren't with me a couple days back when I said this. Listen, you might feel different about this. You're a big sports fan just like me. If it's a foul or a penalty with 4 minutes left in the first quarter, it's a foul or a penalty in the waning seconds of the game.
Yes.
I'm sorry. What? So does this give you the opportunity to tackle somebody or armbar somebody, whether in any sport?
My least favorite phrase of any
that's the other thing.
Hearing announcer is when they say, "Oh, this is good. They're just letting them play." And I'm all for, like, even in hockey, them just, in a game seven.
If it's the whole game.
It's the whole game. If they're letting them play, if they're saying this is Game 7, we're letting them go out there and we're going to let them beat the ever-loving
beat out of each other. That I have no problem with. But if you call a penalty in the first period of Game 7 and the same thing occurs in, let's say, a minute 20 left of a one-goal game, you got to call it.
You can't be inconsistent. You're either going to go one way or the other
and
in a big game.
And these officials are hot stuff. Steve Javi saying, it was a good non-basketball.
The problem with NBA referees. The problem with NBA referees, and it's different in hockey because I don't believe that this is the case. Some of them, and MLB umpires as well, they do this. They try to make it about them. It's always about them. So, these guys, that you got to take it with a grain of salt. Bennett Salvatore's of the world, he made it about him. I don't care if he's from Stanford or not. that's just what they do. So, but you're absolutely right. Penalty is a penalty. A foul is a foul. If it's being called in the first and the second, it should be called in the third.
I have another pet peeve, and it'll make a good segue to the Yankees. Mm. Can people please stop saying RBIs?
Runs batted in. Runs.
Please, you stop with RBIs?
It's RBI.
It's RBI. There is no I's. That's runs batted ins.
Mm-hmm.
Please stop.
And you know, it's actually grounds rule double. It's not a ground rule double. It's grounds.
It's what Sterling says? It's grounds rule double?
Grounds rule double. Because it's the grounds, the fields rules of
see, but throughout my life, when I've been called out as either a captain or a manager, let's go over the ground rules.
When you're saying it in that phrase, it's grounds rule.
Well, I've never played in a major league stadium, so where I've played in my life cannot be mentioned as grounds.
Gravel pits.
Pretty bad. But you know, the Yankees, Joe. You know me, and you know I'm pretty much the king of positivity when it comes to this team. But they and I've been alluding to it the past 2 days on the podcast. They're in huge trouble, mm-hmm. huge trouble, and here's why. Their last nine games is just a good little litmus test as to what I'm bringing up here. I'll give you those numbers in a second. But in baseball, the yin and the yang, pitching and batting, okay, the Yankees had perfect balance. They were the black and white cookie of Major League Baseball. They had everything going right for them.
Look to the cookie.
Seinfeld, yeah. It's like I got Farrakhan and David Duke in my stomach. Anyway. But it was basically the perfect mix that the Yankees had. You had Vernon Wells knocking the cover off the ball. You had Travis Hafner knocking the cover off the ball. You had Kevin Youkilis getting the job done. You had Lyle Overbay getting the job done. Now, Kevin Youkilis probably won't be in a Yankee uniform ever again. Mm-hmm. Vernon Wells, they were trying. Kevin Long had him out yesterday and had a pitching machine on him that could, you know, fire the ball as fast as humanly possible to try to shorten his swing once again because he feels that his swing has gotten longer after watching video on Wells. So he's lost. He's batting under 100. Mm-hmm. Since late May.
His OPS is like 270. OPS, on base plus slugging, is
awful.
278 since that time.
It's awful. You know, when he started out well, Hafner started out well. Hafner's cooled off. And now Girardi's had to play Hafner against lefties because who else does he have? He's got to run him out there.
Yeah, their offense is really in a heap of trouble.
But that's not the only problem right now.
They're getting mediocre pitching, too.
And now the pitching is starting to come downhill. And this is what I'm trying to see. Joe and I made this point a month ago.
And by the way, bad offense, when you have bad offense, if your pitching is not pitching like it was, if it's not pitching at the height, it almost magnifies, even if it's not bad pitching, it magnifies mediocre pitching.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where the Yankees were doing great earlier mm-hmm. in the season because if the pitching was awesome. But if the pitching had a day when it faltered, there was Overbay with a home run
right.
or a big two-run double to bail out the starter or bail out the reliever
right.
that gave up the lead. Then, for the most part, though, it was the pitching that was bailing out this anemic offense. Now, over these last nine games, and this is just a little bit of a litmus test. This is taking that little piece of paper and dipping it into the water. Their last nine games, they're 2-7. They're only scoring 3 runs a game. They're batting 194. They've hit 3 homers, and their ERA for the team is over 5. Joe.
You know, Chris, I actually said this to Jack O'Connell from Yankees Universe. I sit next to him in the press box, and I said to him, you know, they got what they needed out of these guys. If you really think about it, they were thinking like they were going to have Vernon Wells and Lyle Overbay and all of these guys have a very good 6 weeks to start the season before the other guys started to come back.
Granderson and came back, got hurt.
Those guys did exactly what they needed
they
to do. So for people to be coming down on them now, it's like they did what they needed to do. Those guys started coming back. But I'm saying it's just amazing to me that, you know, they got those unbelievable 6 weeks out of those guys. So it was like it was like a godsend because that's what they needed from these guys. And then when the regulars started coming back, they all got hurt. So it was just like now everything that they got from those guys, that they asked for from those guys for those first 6 weeks, now they're coming back down to earth. And it's like, oh my God, now we don't have the regulars. We need these guys to step up a little bit longer. We need them to carry this team. Yeah. And it really is the Yankees are coming back down to earth. And these guys are being asked to do more than they were ever asked to do by the Yankees at the beginning of the season.
I'm telling you right now, when I see Joe Girardi in the dugout, I see him as Noah. And it's like that old Bill Cosby sketch when he's talking about Noah and building the ark and cubits and everything else. And
Noah building the ark.
He says, how long can you tread water? Well, you know, I liken the Yankee season to the Titanic. And all these guys that I mentioned were
Bill
basically...
Bill Cosby, the Titanic. We're getting Kodak film and Pepsi Cola.
You know, but it's the truth. Guys like Hafner, guys like Wells, they were plugging these holes up. They were giving the Yankees these life rafts, these extra lifeboats.
That's true.
And now you cannot get down on these guys. These guys were not supposed to be the guys.
Right.
As Joe just said, they were supposed to stem the tide till the regulars got back. Granderson came back. And what, 8 games later, he goes back on the DL. He just got the pin removed from his pinky. Since he went back on the disabled list, the New York Yankees are batting .216, and they've scored 71 runs. Both of those numbers are the lowest in the major leagues over that span. The lowest. Did you ever think that the New York Yankees would be in that situation?
No, I didn't. And honestly, it's almost at a point where you're looking at Teixeira and you're saying, okay, is he going to be the guy that's going to bring this, right this ship back whenever he comes back? And my answer to that is I don't know and nobody knows because nobody knows what that wrist is going to bring. He can't swing from
Girardi
the left
says,
side of the plate.
Wrists are tricky.
Yeah, is Curtis Granderson going to come back and be the player that he was? I can tell you this. I wouldn't be counting – if I'm a Yankee fan, I'm not counting on Derek Jeter to be the cavalry to reignite this offense right now, and I'm not counting on Alex Rodriguez. So there, to me, this offense – and I'm saying this in my last show here at Yes – this offense is in a heap of trouble. And to me, this is going to be an American League East that the Yankees are, I hate to say this, I do not think it's winnable for this New York Yankee team. I think this team, as constructed right now, can only win a max of 85 to 86 games. I'm saying it.
And you know what,
a
Joe,
max.
And you know what, Joe? It's not only that. It's not just this year. Where's the cavalry?
I agree.
Where's the cavalry? Phil Hughes is not going to be in pinstripes next year.
I agree.
And I talked ad nauseum about Phil Hughes yesterday. 20 minutes of my podcast yesterday, the Off the Wall podcast, was dealt with Phil Hughes. He is what his record is. He's not going to get
– And you know,
I just saw an article –
You know, he's not even what his record is because throughout his career he's gotten so much run support, his record wouldn't have even been this.
That's true too. And he's a true Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Doug Williams, who's a new member of our internet
at Doug Williams, yes,
department here at YesNetwork.com. He just wrote an article on YesNetwork.com. You should go check it out. But he put up Hughes' numbers and his quality starts and his non-quality starts.
And that came – and I'm going to give my boy
Yikes.
Lou DiPietro credit. Doug referenced Lou's tweets from the night before. Lou really nailed it at the game. You know, with the quality starts and the non-quality starts. I mean, what is it, 10.93 ERA in non-quality starts and a 1. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
But look, Phil Hughes is what he is. And to me, to even say, I know, I'm like going nuts here. To even say that, okay, you know what? Phil Hughes is going to come out of this rotation and they're going to be able to throw him in the bullpen and poof, magic. It's 2009. This guy's coming out of the bullpen throwing 95 miles an hour.
He doesn't hit.
And I'm sorry. Phil Hughes is not going to be doing that. And for all the Phil Hughes lovers out there, I'm sorry. This guy is not the answer.
Listen, I said it yesterday. I'll say it again. He doesn't stink. He's talented, okay? And he handles the media like he goes out there, he spits the bit. He's always in front of his locker. He always talks to everybody. He answers every question. You know, I just think he'd be more successful maybe in the National League, maybe in a bigger park. As I mentioned yesterday, he's 4-0 with a .82 ERA at Safeco in his career in 5 starts.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's not like the guy isn't talented. He's talented. It's one of those situations where I don't think he can do it in New York. I just don't. And somebody tweeted, you know, Phil Hughes is making me start to miss AJ Burnett. And if a Yankee fan says that, you know, there's something wrong.
And when it comes down to it, Ivan Novra, he's down in the minors, or as Mike Francesa says, Ivan Novra.
I was just going to say, you almost said
it. I almost said Mike Francesa's Ivan Novra. But, and Michael Pineda. Michael Pineda is the guy that everybody's looking at right now. And to me, when Michael Pineda is ready, Michael Pineda will be in this rotation.
Because you're not going to take David Phelps out. You're not.
No.
Because he's a number five star. He, you know, what else do you want from a number five?
Right.
You know, that's his job. He goes out there and he tries to keep his team in the game as long as he can. And that's my next point I want to bring up with you.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought this up during the game last night, Michael Kay and David Cone. And it's, you know, the pressure on the starters. You know, Andy Pettitte gives up those quick early runs and he's got to be thinking, well, geez, I can't give up anymore.
Right.
You know, the way this offense has been producing, I have to go out there and pretty much throw a shutout.
Yeah, a 3-0 deficit's like 13-0.
But how much of that is in a pitcher's mind, Joe? I mean, you're at the stadium. You could see these press, you know, not the press conferences, but you go up to the players in the clubhouse. You get the feel when you're there. I mean, there has to be a ton of pressure on these guys.
It goes hand in hand. It definitely goes hand in hand because when a pitcher knows that, okay, I give up one or two here, but the offense is, you know, most likely going to score some runs here for me and give me another opportunity to hold down this team, that's one way of pitching. Another way of pitching is, now you give up that early lead. Phil Hughes gave up those two runs early the other night, and it was just like it was an uphill battle all night, and they didn't score any runs. They lost that game 6-0, and Pettitte gets in the deficit, and they lose the game 8-3, and it's just now it's in the it's a snowball effect. When you're not scoring runs and you give up early leads, then the pitcher says, I have to be perfect. I have to be pinpoint. I have to be making my pitches all night. I have to tiptoe to at least give the offense a shot to score two or three runs in this game to give me a lead. That's the mindset. It's a complete snowball effect, and it's a team-wide problem right now.
And here's the Yankees in a nutshell, pretty much. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
And you know this. I'm not breaking any news here. The offense needs to get on the board first. They need their starting pitching, which is quality,
mm-hmm.
to keep that lead in order to get to their strength, their bullpen. And right now, Joe, the strength of the team isn't even getting on the field. You know, you're not right. Seeing David Robertson in situations where he's going to keep the game with the lead, with the Yankees with the lead. You're not seeing Mariano Rivera getting safe opportunities. When he does, he's nailing them down. I mean, but one of the strengths of this bullpen, you talk about Sean Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about
Preston
Claiborne, who's come up and done well. I don't care about the home run he just gave up.
Yeah, everybody has a bad
night. Right. You talk about Mo. You talk about David Robertson. I don't think Jabba Chamberlain's too much longer for pinstripes. I just don't see it. I you know, and if the Yankees here's another thing, 24 games till the All-Star break going into last night's action. Okay, but the next 10, in my opinion. It's just my opinion, and I said it yesterday, I'll say it again. These next 10 games are make or break to 2013. You have four with the Rays, you have three with the Rangers, and then you have three with the Baltimore Orioles down at Camden Yards before you start playing the Twins. But here's my thing. 23 games now to the All-Star break as we tape this on Friday. 23. These 23 games, because – you know, that magical fairy dust where everybody's supposed to come back after the All-Star break, that's when everybody's supposed to come back. So this 2013 season, and if they're going to be in the race towards the end, is predicated on how they do in the next 23 games. And I'm telling you right now, I got to concur with my buddy over here. Just like Leonardo DiCaprio concurred in that movie.
Do you concur? Catch me if you can.
Catch me if you can. Okay? That you cannot count on Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez and Curtis Granderson and Mark Teixeira to be who they are on their baseball cards. You can't. You can't. And look what Alex Rodriguez did.
You're going to be counting on a pair of 39-year-olds.
You can't do it. So if you think that's going to be the saving grace, and hey, they might come back and do well, but these next 23 games, boys and girls, if the Yankees go 6-17, you could bring back Babe Ruth. It's not going to matter. You could bring back Murderer's Row. It's going to be too late.
Right.
It's going to be too late. Now, look, the Red Sox aren't exactly running away with this division. Nobody is. But I'm telling you right now, a team like the Orioles can get very hot. And if a team like the Orioles can get hot, if they sweep the Yankees down at Camden Yards in their next series after they play the Rangers, I think that's a good night.
I'm going to tell you this, too. The Yankees cannot count on beating the Blue Jays anymore either, because the Blue Jays are balling. The team that the Yankees saw early in the year that they counted on beating all the time, they're playing like everybody thought they were going to play at the beginning of the year, before the season. And not only that, but they're getting Jose Reyes back. So if the Yankees want to think that, you know, they're going to continue to beat up on the Toronto Blue Jays, who they're 8-1 against this season, if they think they're going to end up, you know, 17-1 or 16-1 when it's all said and done, that's not going to happen. So you look at the Cleveland Indians and the Toronto Blue Jays. They're 14-2 against those two teams. They're 39-33. So you take away those two season series, and you're looking at a pretty mediocre team.
I've called myself the lighthouse.
In fact, you're looking at an under 500 team.
Right. I've called myself the lighthouse of hope with this team on many occasions. I'm a realist as well. Okay. I'm not gonna sit here and lie to people. I'm not gonna sit here and not tell you what my gut is feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, I see the handwriting on the wall, and the scary thing is it's just not this year.
Yeah.
Because next year, still have Jeter under contract. What's he going to be? How many DHs can you have on this team? How many? You're going to have Derek Jeter. Alex Rodriguez is under contract until he's 42, for crying out loud. Phil Hughes is going to be gone out of the rotation. Hiroki Kuroda is probably not coming back. Mariano Rivera is done.
I really think that the Yankee management and Brian Cashman, when this season is all said and done, or at the trade deadline, they're going to look at this team and they're going to have some decisions to make. I really do feel that way. And that's including with Curtis Granderson. That's including with Robinson Cano. I think they're going to have some decisions to make. I really do.
And let me talk about Cano for a second. I mean, he's not exactly – listen, his power numbers are there.
I'll tell you what he's doing. Teams are realizing – that Cano is the only one that can beat them in that lineup. By the way, Brett Gardner is number two in slugging on this team.
Thank you.
Okay, so
Brett Gardner.
So Robinson Cano is the only one in this lineup that can beat you. Early on in the year, they tried this, you know, very early on, but the rest of the team was hitting. Now the team is not hitting. So what's happening is he's not getting pitches to hit.
That's true.
He's being more aggressive. You know, they're throwing him, you know, curveballs in the dirt, and he's swinging at him because he feels like he's got to take this team on his back.
Right, right.
So he's all screwed up right now.
Fakakta, I think, is the Yiddish word. But I just don't see – I don't see how you can give him – and I know he's not getting pitches to hit, but this is his contract year.
Mm-hmm.
And look at Alex Rodriguez. Look at Derek Jeter. Do you really want to lock in for 10 years to another player, multi-million dollars? Clayton Kershaw wants $300 million from the Dodgers?
Mm-hmm.
These guys are hot stuff. You got to think about a guy like Willie Mays or Hank Aaron or any of these guys in the past. $300 million and you play every fifth day!
How about the St. Louis Cardinals, who basically told Albert Pujols to take a walk? And you know what? All they do is continue to win.
But I got to give it to Kershaw. Why not? The Dodgers have it, and they're probably stupid enough to give it to him.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
Is Clayton Kershaw going to win every game he pitches?
No.
You're not getting $300 million, son!
Yeah, no, I agree. And the only one who, in the league, who could even have the nerve to ask for anything like that to me is Justin Verlander. And even he is, you know, he wouldn't even dare ask for that.
It's ridiculous. It's getting to the point where, you know, if Joe DiMaggio was alive, if Mickey Mantle was alive.
Did you ever hear what Joe DiMaggio's line was?
He's a partner.
He said, yeah. He goes, the story is he was asked in the mid-'80s, hey, Joe, if you played in this era, you know, looking at these salaries, what do you think you'd be making? He said, I'd go up to George Steinbrenner's office, I'd put out my hand and I'd say, nice to meet you, partner.
Yeah. Yeah. It's laughable. I mean, these contracts are laughable, and they don't make men the way they used to. I'm sorry.
They don't make men. Brawny men. Men.
They don't.
Men made of brawn and steel.
They don't.
Who made the Eiffel Tower.
Ron Burgundy is right. But you just... we got a text from Lou DiPietro. Francisco Cervelli technically leads the team in OPS. Well, technically.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Lou.
Lou is right behind us. Yeah. This is our last podcast, as we mentioned at the top. I think this is a pretty good way to end it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just bashed the Yankees for 20 minutes.
We're not bashing them. We're speaking, you know.
We're being honest.
We're being honest. We're being, you know, God forbid, you know. Yeah. And they talked about it on the broadcast last night. Let's face it. This team, you know, you could basically, if you had smell-o-vision, you'd leave the room. It's not working right now.
Right.
It worked in the beginning when the guys were hitting.
Yeah.
And I'm not putting this on the pitching staff. I'm not. Because the starters, they're allowed to give up runs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you give up 3 runs and leave the game, the definition of a quality outing is 6 innings, 3 runs.
Right.
Okay? It's not really quality in a starter's mind,
mm-hmm.
but that's the definition of quality. The Yankees are only scoring 3 runs a game in their last 9. They're batting under the Mendoza line. Vernon Wells, since the end of May, is batting under 100.
Yeah.
Under 100.
Yeah, it's.
And he's batting cleanup.
I know.
And that's not a knock on Girardi.
No. He can only.
Thomas Neal going to bat cleanup?
He can only work with what he's given. That's it.
Look, it's going to be scary. Unless they start to hit again. Because I do have faith in the rotation, and I have faith in the
bullpen. Yeah.
If there's a lead, obviously. I have faith. That's the winning formula for the Yankees. They got to get on the board first. The starter has to keep that lead. And listen, when you're a starting pitcher and you go – not that I could speak to this. I've never been a starting pitcher in the major leagues. But when you go out there and you have a lead, you have a responsibility. You have a responsibility to hold that lead.
Right.
And you know now – you know, back in the dynasty days – Andy Pettit could go out there, and if he had a 5-run lead, 5-0, here's my 94-mile-an-hour fastball. If you're a daisy, if you do.
Mm-hmm.
If you hit it, fine. I know I got the guys behind me in that lineup to score more runs. 5 isn't going to be the end of it here. We're going to get more. Now, you know, those 6-7-run games, they're few and far between. And, I you know, this is your last one. I wish it was on better Yankee terms. But
Chris, looking at the Yankees, you just have to, you know, looking at the recent, you know, what they've done recently, you know, they took 3 of 4 in Seattle, which they had to do. And then they go to Oakland and they get beat by a better team and swept by a better team right now. And they almost get swept by a really awful Anaheim Angels team. I'm sorry, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
A team that has no life all season long.
They almost got swept by them. He almost got swept.
The Astros swept the Angels.
Josh Hamilton and his blue eye syndrome is now hitting .207. You know, it's just, and then they come back and they split against a really awful Dodgers team. I'm sorry, that's an awful. Other than Puig, and the little things that they've had this year, they got swept by them. So there's a lot of concern with this Yankee team, and then the Rays obviously coming into town and taking game one. So there are things where Yankee fans need to point to and say, you know what?
Listen,
Houston, we have a problem.
When the Rays are hitting more than you are,
when
the Rays are scoring 8 runs, you've got issues. Mm-hmm. When you have 1 hit through 6 innings, and the one is a Brett Gardner leadoff single, and then a Ichiro infield hit where he beats Matt Moore to the bag.
Mm-hmm.
You've got big-time problems. The Yankees right now, their offense, they're the Rays.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rays are better than them right now.
Yeah.
Digest that for a second. And I don't care how good your pitching is. If you're not plating runs, you're not scoring any games. You're not.
Right.
Joe, it has been an absolute privilege, pleasure. You're, like I said before, you're one of my – you are my best friend here. So I'm going to have to go find a new best friend in the building.
I'll be a Doug.
Yeah. But no, in all seriousness, I really appreciate you know, you being a part of this and you building this with me and, you know, getting the guests on board. And I don't know, it wouldn't have grown, like I said 2 weeks ago or last week, it wouldn't have grown the way it did, and we wouldn't have a national award without you behind the wheel.
Thanks, Chris.
Driving that this thing.
Really means a lot.
You are going to be greatly missed. I said it on Twitter yesterday. I'll say it here again today. I said it last week. Their gain is definitely our loss. It's going to be impossible to replace you. So we're really not. Lou's going to come on.
Thank you very
Lou DePietro will be on, but, you know, for the most part, this is going to be a Chris Sheeran production.
Thank you.
And we'll have Lou on a specific day or two. But I want to try to do this through GarageBand and not, you know, Siberia Talk Radio going forward. So like I said, listen, one more thing before I let you
sure.
do your little sign-off here. The fans as well. I just want to reiterate that because I get little messages here and again on Twitter. And, you know, it's just it tickles me because Twitter, for the most part, it should be called Critter for all the critics out there,
mm-hmm.
For lack of a better way of putting it. But, you know, it's nice when someone actually sends you a tweet and it's positive. And I've gotten many positive tweets on this podcast, and they don't only include me on the tweet. They include my partner. And stuff like that means the world to me. And I just want to thank everybody who's out there who downloads this on iTunes and has the time during the day to sit down there and listened to the two of us babble, the ones who came down to Barre, in the face of a hurricane 2 years ago and sat there with us and won some prizes
and
had a good time.
And we've had a lot of guests on the show, but some of our favorites, obviously Kevin Kernan.
Yeah. First and
Seth Everett. And,
uh-huh.
Some of the real, the guys that have, you know, been on multiple times.
Al Iana's,
absolutely. So we, you know, absolutely have to thank those guys too. And I'm sure on the Chris Sheeran show, you're going to be, you know, booking a lot of these same guys who are some of the best in the business on your new show.
That's TCSS, by the way. Hashtag TCSS.
TCSS, nice.
Chris, not biting off Michael Kay or anything.
Chris, I want to thank you for the opportunity because when we started Off the Wall, this was actually supposed to be a one-man production.
Well, it's supposed to be me.
Right.
But then I said, you know, what are you sitting there for?
Yeah, no, and then we just started, you know, Chris did the first segment of the show, and then
I did my monologue.
We took a break, and then I came in, and you know, then it kind of grew into, well, let's just start right off the bat. And then we started getting guests. And then we,
That's when we really took off.
Then we really took off. So to get this opportunity to sit here and voice our opinions on the world of sports in a forum that Yankee fans could come to and easily listen to us through the magic of YesNetwork.com has really been really a thrill for me. As I was cleaning out my desk last night here at Yes, I did get a little emotional. It was a bittersweet moment for me because from the time I was 20 years old, this is all I've known. I've known being here, living, breathing, eating, sleeping, the Yes Network. I've done everything in this industry because of the opportunities that I've been given here, from being a writer and a researcher, a statistician, to a feature producer and an AP, and then finally taking the YesNetwork.com job in February 2007, and creating something that nobody even thought we were going to be able to create. Is something that's very satisfying for me. And something that else is very satisfying for me, and I spoke with you about this, is that I grew up loving the Yankees. I grew up, you know, and you might not show from time to time because, you know, I have become more journalistic over the last few years. But, in my opinions and views of covering this team, and that's just what happens when you take this job, but I grew up loving Don Mattingly. I grew up loving the New York Yankees. I grew up in an era in the 80s when it was a Mets town. It wasn't a Yankees town. And my dream was to one day cover this team on a day-to-day basis, even for a short period of time, and to start my professional life at the age of 20 years old and get that experience. And then finally in 2007, at the age of 26, start to interview players on the field and have different experiences like this and be even on that field. It certainly was a dream come true. And every goal that I accomplished as a young man I know there's a lot more in my life that I have yet to accomplish. But if I look back on this 11 years and 3 months of my life, I can honestly and truly say that this, you know, if nothing else happens in my life, this was the greatest 11 years and 3 months of my life. And I've done it longer than I could have ever expected. And I've done it with people that I consider my family. And Chris Sheeran is like a brother to me. A guy like Lou DiPietro, who just joined this department over a year ago, and he's really going to take the bull by the horns here and continue to make the YesNetwork.com brand what it is. There's nothing more that I could say that other than I'm just so proud of what I've accomplished and what is still to be accomplished here at Yes for the people that are staying and for the people that I love. And for the fans out there that really did appreciate the hard work that went into trying to give the fans a different perspective on the Yankees that they wouldn't normally see in the television experience of Yes, of getting a different viewpoint, a different angle on the Yankees. And that's all I ever wanted to do. That's all I ever wanted to do was cover this team, cover it right, and do what I could to the best of my abilities to make sure that people out there really got the best experience watching and seeing the brand that we've created. And I'm just so proud of the things that we've done. And I'm so proud to call myself your partner. I'm so proud of my time here at Yes. I'm so proud of the things that we've accomplished. I'm so proud that I could call myself a journalist in the eyes of Yankee fans. And with that, all I have to say is, you know, thank you, and maybe one day down the road our paths will cross again.
I hope so, and I want you to take us out. It's all yours. The calm is yours, Captain Spock. Take us out your last time here.
Well, for the last time, everybody, this has been the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. For my partner in crime, Chris Sheeran, I'm Joe Wariema saying thanks, everybody, for listening all these years, and continue to listen to The Chris Sheeran Show right here on YesNetwork.com.
The Off the Wall podcast comes to you each week on iTunes and YesNetwork.com. If you like what you're listening to, simply subscribe to the show on iTunes. And if you have an extra minute, leave a comment and rating.